Indeed. Welcome back, everybody. It's the Dom and Colin podcast. I am Colin, once again here with Dom to talk some more Survivor Ghost Island. Dom, how are you today?
I'm not too bad. How are you?
Well, you just sent me a link to an Instagram post of the weather in England right now, and it's pretty insane. And I for one, applaud you for being having the resiliency to podcast in such a crazy lightning storm that's going on.
I was not convinced I would still have electricity at this point in the evening, but luckily, or maybe not so luckily, I am still here and ready to deliver the hot takes on Survivor this week. And when I said I'm not too bad, I'm very excited because in a few short days, I will be in Boston with you and lots of other people for the live know-it-alls. I think this is my third in a row now, and I will continue that streak for as long as I can, because it's always a ton of fun, and very excited to see you and everybody else, and anyone out there who's listening, feel free to come and say hi.
Yeah, that's right. Next week, I can't believe it's already next week, is when we're going to Boston for that live Survivor Know-It-Alls event. And definitely anyone listening to this who is there, totally, I don't think we're too difficult to find. Come say hey, that would be awesome. And we would love to hear from anyone who listens to the show that's going to be there. So that'd be looking forward to that. I'm sure that's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, the accent makes it a little hard to blend in, even if you're trying to. But you maybe could get away with it.
Yeah, we'll see. All right, Dom, let's get into the latest Survivor action. And after unfortunately losing Chris Noble during last week's episode, a big hit for the season, but we're going to come back. And Dominic is, I think, Dominic on the show now, not you, Dominic. We're transitioning to Survivor Ghost Island, Dominic, now. You're now Dom number two. Dominic was talking about, after the big kind of display that he put on at Tribal Council, wanting to come back to camp and really put a lot of effort into mitigating his threat level and trying to smooth over his image as quickly as possible. I thought it was really interesting, first of all, just that we got to see someone get this kind of confessional on air. That seems pretty rare, that we get that kind of information and get to really hear that person's insight in the moment about their approach to essentially wanting to hang back, is what he talks about, and like let other people call the shots for a round or two. What did you make of that, and how that actually ended up playing out this week?
I'm not surprised that if we were going to hear this from anybody, it would be Dom, because he is getting Boston Rob levels of coverage at the moment. This is, I don't want to say unprecedented, because I just gave the exact precedent 5 seconds ago, but you see where I'm going with this. This is not standard. This is not what you expect, even from these high visibility alpha male coronation edits that we have become accustomed to in recent years. So I'm not quite sure what to make of it. And I think for this episode, the line between the episode analysis and the edit zone is going to be heavily blurred, because the outcome is fairly simple. We all call this 10 minutes in, as soon as Libby got her first sentence of the episode. But as so much of the suspense came from, what is this going to mean for Dom and Wendell going forward? Like, maybe this is not going to be the week that things turn around for them, but will they have to watch their backs, or is this going to be an easy march to the finish line?
Right. And I do think it makes sense that they would go to Dominic to get his reaction to having Chris finally leave now, after making that such a big storyline, not only at the merge, but just basically every episode pre-merge as well. But I thought it was so interesting, the distinction between what we would normally get in this spot is, oh, thank God that person's gone, I can finally move forward with my game. And with Dominic, we get that, but we also get, I still have a lot of work to do. I'm still really focused on the end game. I know that there's still a long way to go. I'm not counting any chickens before they hatch, and here's what I'm doing this week. It may look like I'm hanging back, but really I'm letting someone else take the reins for a little bit so that I don't appear to be such a giant threat. I think you are right that this continues the pattern of really incredible treatment from the editors that Dominic has gotten in terms of being able to tell his own story and let us know, at least in simple terms that will work for the TV narrative, where he is coming from on a week-to-week basis, which I do think is really important. And we further, Dom, hear this week a lot about how, even more about how Wendell feels great about Dom in particular, and then Laurel and Donathan on top of that. We hear so much about that for, I still feel like Dominic, the arrow's got to be pointing nowhere but up at this point for him.
And in terms of how the episode played out, to start with, a lot of the focus seemed to be on Wendell, and when the discussion was around who's going to flip and when are they going to do it, Wendell seemed to be the first target that people were going for, despite Dominic's theatrics, despite him being the front man of that alliance, at least from what it seems. So maybe he is seen as like the lesser of two evils, if you're thinking about it in those terms.
Yeah, I haven't talked specifically with the casuals about Dominic in particular, but what do we know what the Facebook fans think of Dominic and how he's coming across on TV?
I could see that going either way, actually. I could see them hating the just saturation that he's getting and wanting to see anyone else take him down, or I could see them loving him. He is like the down-to-earth blue-collar guy who's playing a pretty great game so far. So I actually could see that going either way. I would not want to put any of my very hard-earned money on that.
Yeah, I ask because I feel like if they were so inclined, the editors could do a pretty easy job making Dominic generally unlikable to a casual Survivor viewer. The same way, I don't think they put in a lot of effort to make Joe Mena look as nearly as good as I feel like they're going out of their way to make Dominic look, Joe from last season, for any casuals who may have forgotten. I feel like with this kind of character type, they could quite easily and quite... you know, in a very obvious way, make the audience feel like they're out there just playing too hard and are disloyal and not honorable, and someone that they wouldn't really want to be rooting for, like too aggressive in just kind of like blunt game terms. Whereas I do think Dominic is getting like really special treatment, which is kind of the point, I guess, this entire conversation sprung off from. It really does seem like they're taking a lot of care with Dominic and making sure that he comes across both smart and likable, which I am totally fine with. I'm totally here for Dominic continuing to come across that way this season. I think he's doing a hell of a job.
You often hear players like that being described as game bots, and when that's used as a criticism, it's usually that they're not really interesting themselves as people or as characters or even as players sometimes. It's just that the content they get is so heavily focused on this is what this means for my game and this is what I'm going to do. And with Dom, it's less one note than that, in the sense that he's a very engaging TV presence. So even when that's what he's saying, it comes across as exciting and you want to watch it. But at the same time, it feels quite toneless, in the sense that he's not Bradley, right? He's not a villain. He's not being set up for an obvious downfall sometime down the road. And I see people now, especially after this week, talking about him as a finalist, as a winner, with a lot more confidence than they did in the past. And yet, I don't think we're meant to root for him unequivocally to succeed either. So I think it's almost like they're taking this neutral stance on him and just letting his gameplay speak for himself. We're meant to see him as competent at what he's doing, and that's meant to endear us to him more so than he's the obvious hero or he's the obvious villain. Does that mm-hmm. make sense at all?
That makes a ton of sense. Yeah, you know, how many times do we have to see it? Like Ben last season being a great example, or Boston Rob when he was getting that Dom treatment the first time around. Like they're not unwilling by any stretch to give someone just a pillar to post hero edit.
Yeah, and Dom so far, so you're setting up a contrast with them is what you're saying,
right? Like if they wanted Dom to be the mastermind who runs the season from day one through day 39, I don't think they would necessarily shy away from that.
Yeah, he's not the amazing underdog war hero, and he's not carrying his family on his back so far, at least. Give him time. Maybe he can work that in there. But for now, he is just there doing his job, basically. He's out there on a business trip, and he seems to be doing pretty well at it. So that's the takeaway so far. And do you think that's meant to augur well for him? Because I see lots of people out there who like him and like his alliance. So that pair with Wendell and then that foursome with Laurel and Jonathan, I think people like that in part because it's not top heavy. There's no one person carrying all the weight there. And you can easily imagine Wendell turning on Dom, Dom turning on Wendell, and more on that in a little bit. But then also Laurel and Jonathan clearly have their own agency, and we see them this episode debating, should we turn on them right now? Is this a time to make our move? So it's not just going to be an easy game for the two of them, at least from how it seems at the moment. And yet the way this edit is going, it sometimes feels like they're just desperately scrabbling for any doubt they can conjure up for why Dom and Wendell won't just march to the end together. So where do you come down on that?
So yeah, during the course of this episode airing, and we were getting a big setup of, oh, you know, the Malolos, hey, if they know the Navidis are splitting votes and Laurel and Donathan want to mix things up, the Malolos by themselves would potentially have enough votes to take out any one of the Navidis they want. And Laurel is getting sketched out potentially by Wendell taking too long to tell her about the idols that both he and Don, excuse me, Dominic both have. I was thinking as I was watching this episode, well, you know what, Colin? You thought Stephanie Johnson was the biggest like lock to make the finals for the first month of this season. I guess we live in a world where Wendell leaving tonight is within the realm of possibility. But after seeing the way this episode played out, and in particular, after seeing Michael get up, play his idol, and Wendell obviously knows, okay, there goes our primary target. We hope the backup votes come in. And neither Dominic nor Wendell still feels even slightly compelled to play their own idol just in case things go wrong. That signals to me that despite the way the story was told for air, I would guess at virtually no point did Dominic and Wendell feel like things might not go their way this round. And going forward, I don't know how inclined I'm going to be to fall for one of those types of bluffs again.
And I can see every single next time on Survivor segment being some just very obvious feint in the direction of Dom and Wendell getting taken down, and that just never even coming close to happening.
Right. We said a couple weeks ago, like, stay tuned for once we hit the merge, every single next time on Survivor being, oh, this will finally be the week things get shaken up. And it's just not the same way that it was. Every single one for South Pacific was, oh, it's finally going to get turned around. And then it just never does.
Until it actually is, maybe. But I see, this is why I'm torn, because I want to have enough faith in the cast that then it's not going to be like the Ometepe zombies, right? It's not going to be the girls in One World and Troy's and somehow being the resistance leader against Kim. Like, I want to give this cast more credit than that they can put up a greater fight. And I think they will. And maybe one of the reasons that Dom and Wendell are, or whichever one of them does go on to win, is going to be regarded in such high terms is they were able to fight that off. They were able to sniff that out, play their idol at the right time, or maybe there was... Yeah, maybe this wasn't a perfect game for them. It was it gets turned around on them, and then they're able to fight their way back up from that. But at least right now, it seems like their star is in the ascendant, and no one is even in their orbit. They're just there by themselves. I'm hoping to see some kind of challenge. And there are a few ways that could happen. So maybe Kellen wants to strike first. Maybe Laurel and Donathan decide they want to strike sooner rather than later. But for the moment, it seems like the focus is going to be on the two of them. And justifiably so, maybe, because for as much as they're getting the vast majority of the screen time, no one else is even putting up much of a claim to it at the moment.
Right. And I want to find out what you thought about Laurel in particular this week. I referenced it a little earlier when talking about Wendell, about the scene where he tells her that, you know, he's 1,000% wants to be in the top four with her. And when he feels comfortable that she is on board with that, he says, and by the way, Dom has an idol that's real, not just that shell that he's been wearing around. And I also have an idol that's real. And we got a very interesting juxtaposition of confessionals here between Wendell and Laurel. Wendell talking about how a big piece of what the considerations he uses with when he's playing the game are non-verbal things, they're physical things. And we have this coupled with like this confessional rolling over a scene where Laurel is not interested, like she's unhappy with the things that she's being told, and Wendell doesn't seem to pick up on it. Now, I will buy that this is an episode where they probably had to go pretty far out of their way to build up suspense, and this was a compelling way of doing that. But I do think that Laurel in particular is not going to be someone who is going to just like sit idly by and be happy making it to the finals and losing. I do think there is plenty of room down the line for potentially things to get turned around here. And I'm hoping that we live in like an editing world where the Stephanie Johnson thing can happen again, and some blindside can happen on Dom or Wendell once we get down to like final seven-ish or whatever.
You do have these clues scattered throughout the season that Wendell sometimes is not reading the room correctly. And
right.
I could easily see it coming down to them putting the hit out on Wendell and him just playing his idol at the wrong time, or walking home with that immunity necklace, I guess, as a souvenir. And you also had what I thought was an interesting quote this episode, and maybe it's just me that finds it interesting. Maybe I'm the rube that's reading into the obvious decoy here, but I'm curious what you think about this. So at Tribal, Jeff asked about the new Final Tribal format and whether it enables the more active game players to have a better chance over the Coattail Riders, which by itself is a weird thing to put in there. Firstly, it's like this meta reference to part of the show that's coming later, but also acknowledging that the format has changed and how that change affects the game, I wasn't expecting that to even come up. I thought, insofar as that would be acknowledged, it's as it's happening, as like when Jeff is introducing the format at Final Tribal, he would say, and now you will get a chance to question them, or there's this back and forth or whatever. To have this flagged up in episode 8 or episode 9 is, it was kind of out of the blue for me.
Yeah, that is really interesting. I noticed him saying that, but I hadn't thought really like twice about it and given it a second thought. But I do think that is an interesting thing to note from this Tribal Council, that maybe that is some type of foreshadowing about how Final Tribal Council may play out.
Yeah, I'll read Dom's response, because when I do, it'll become abundantly clear why I'm bringing this up. He said, quote, "The new Final Tribal format allows people to come out here and turn on their best friend," and then this, it immediately cuts to Laurel with this musical cue in the background, and then back to Donathan again. And then he continues, "and then have the ability to explain the situation to them at the end as to why they had to do it." Now, to me, I don't know if that best friend is meant to be Wendell, and that's how he eventually comes a cropper at the hands of Dom, or if that's how this suspicion that Laura has about Wendell eventually manifests itself, where that's a split in their alliance, and maybe Dom and Wendell get in there before they do, and then they have to justify to Laurel and Donathan why that happened. Or maybe it's Laurel and Donathan end up turning on each other, and then whichever one of them sneaks into the finals has to explain that to the other one on the jury.
Interesting. Do you have are you leaning any particular direction on how that might be tied back in later, or do you just think it's, hey, note this, that something may, that, you know, when you rewatch this season, that quote might stand out?
I think we're rapidly approaching Game Changers territory, where we have 7 different people that we're penciling in for the finals at this stage. so I'm reluctant to take a stance on that either way, but I could see any of those really coming to fruition. Although it does seem like one of Dom and Wendell has to be there, and after this episode, despite that quote, I'm thinking it might be with each other. Like, it might be a clash of the titans there in the end. But if not, then, yeah, maybe Dom cuts Wendell or the reverse, and that's going to be the big selling point, is will Dom lead a bitter jury, or will Game recognize Game, and that's, like, the big crowning moment in the finale?
Interesting. And yeah, I believe during Game Changers, we were penciling 7 or 8 people into the finals, none of whom were Troy's in. So stay tuned for the end of this season when, like, Sebastian is the third finalist or whatever.
At the final 8, I believe we had 7 or 8 different people penciled in. but hopefully we can turn over a new leaf here. What do you make of that concept in general, though, of Jeff taking yet another opportunity to hammer home this point of you have to make big moves if you want to win this game? And thank God I had the vision to renovate Final Tribal so the co-tailors have less of a chance now.
Well, I think it was less about him talking about how great this new Final Tribal Council format is, and more, I would suspect at this point in the game, especially when Jeff knows how that vote's going to go that night, he knows they're going to split between Michael and Libby, and it's just whether or not Michael plays an idol. I would be guessing that Jeff, at every opportunity at this point in the season, is trying to hammer home to these people, hey, maybe it wouldn't be the worst idea to make a big move. Like, he doesn't want it to just be a potential, like, pagonging of these Malolos and then this core Navidi that has formed and seems to have everyone else under their spell just playing their way down to the end game. I would guess that Jeff, far more often than we're going to see on TV, is going to be advocating during this season for making huge moves, whether or not he thinks that that's like a truly the way that one generally wins Survivor. I think he is thinking of it from the perspective of, we would love it if someone on this season would mix something up.
And maybe I'm reading too much into it being Dom that gives voice to that, because he is the go-to narrator for the show at the moment. So nothing to read into there, maybe. But it is weird that Jeff is bringing up this inside baseball so early in the season, so relatively early, because I would bet a sizable portion of the audience, even the ones that have been watching for years and years now, could not tell you how and when the Final Tribal format changed. And even if they could, they wouldn't care. They don't attach any significance to it the way that Jeff does. So the fact that he's bringing that up, that he's spending time in the episode to reference that, is bizarre. And I can't help but read into it, given how bizarre that is.
Yeah, I got a text from Casual Anna asking me what Jeff was talking about, because she didn't know what the change was at Final Tribal Council.
And I have more faith in Casual Anna to pay attention to that kind of thing, then 99% of casuals out there who don't have a direct link to Colin Stone himself. So
I
don't know why this is a thing, and I can't help but think there's a reason, and I dread to think what that reason is, frankly.
Okay. Oh, well, very good note, Dom. I'm glad that you noticed that. I want to go back to quickly just that scene of Laurel and Wendell, you know, when he tells her about those idols, and from her perspective here, where I thought it was so interesting. What her immediate response is, why are you lying to me? Like, you don't have an idol. You would have told me about this already. It seems to me like Laurel, even as much of it may, like, while much of it may have been playing it up for TV to sell the idea that they might vote Wendell out here, I definitely do buy that Laurel was extremely taken aback by finding out this information at this point in the game. And I thought the confessional she gave, where she says, every day we tell each other that we have each other's backs 100%, but this proved I can only trust him to a certain point. I loved hearing this from Laurel, first of all. And I think that is like the correct insight, by the way, whenever you find out about an idol from one of your, what you thought was like your ride or die allies that it turns out they've had for a while. What did you think of, just from Laurel's perspective here, over the course of this episode? I would imagine she's going to have all of the information about how everyone is voting, and we're going to see that at no point did she really strongly consider potentially flipping that around. So how do you think Laurel is currently viewing her situation with Wendell and Dominic as potentially the two people she still wants to go to the end with, but now she knows they are certainly very willing to hold things from her?
I don't think she wants to go to the end with them. I think she sees the risk that's inherent in that already. It's just a question of, when do I make my move? And okay, now that we have, what is it, 12, 11 people left? I think it's the final 12, right?
Chris was 13, so we're down after losing Libby to 11, I believe.
Sure, but for this vote, at final 12, it feels so early to turn on someone who, for as much as you think they're making a mistake in telling you and you're wondering why it took them so long, they did in fact tell you, right? Whereas Michael, who ostensibly is your Malolo ally, and it's Malolo for life, BFFs forever, Michael didn't tell you anything. He just whipped out that idol at Tribal, and no one was any the wiser beforehand. So yeah, I think you have signs of trust there, and you know that they will always be the targets before you will, and you have the ability to pivot quite effectively. So if you want to, it seems like that's a sinking ship, and you want to jump back to Malolo, or maybe you want to work with the Naviti women and Sebastian, you can do that. And I think Laurel in particular maybe has more options than anybody else in the game at the moment. And it's fun seeing that alliance with Donathan, not only because as a pair they're adorable and I love their dynamic together, but also because it feels like he's almost a devil on her shoulder saying, we can make the move now, we could go for it. And he seems eager at the thought of getting a chance to make a move. And she's the one who has to hold him in and restrain him and be the voice of caution.
Yeah, I feel like if we were out there, we put it in these terms weirdly, as if this was even hypothetically realistic, but if we were out there watching the game like unfold in real time, I think at this point, Laurel would be the person. She would certainly be my front runner, if not heavy front runner, just based on her spot within the game. It really does seem like, is there anyone that we've heard of that doesn't seem to actively like Laurel and want to be voting with her, if not now, like not only now but later on in the game as well?
There are some people who I imagine don't really have a strong take either way, or when they think about her or she's brought up, it's, oh yeah, she seems cool, I like her. But as far as I know, there's no one who actively dislikes Laurel who's like plotting her demise at this very moment, whereas there are people like Donathan who really value her and want her in there as an ally. So yeah, it seems like she's in a great spot, and I wish I could read more into her saying that she's considering turning on Dom and Wendell, because she is, firstly, she's smart enough to consider her options and to at least entertain the thought, even if ultimately she doesn't end up going through with it. And also, she knows enough about how the show works that they want that kind of material. They want people in her spot to be saying, this would be a great time to maybe turn on Dom and Wendell. And she also knows that she can guarantee herself some screen time by giving them that. So, really nothing to read into there, because it's what she has to do either way. It's just doing the job. But I wish I could attach any more meaning to it. I wish I could justify doing that. But let's go back to Wendell's mistake, maybe, in doing this, because I know you're a big proponent of the view that you just want to keep that information to yourself. If you find the idol, that is yours to keep, that's yours to play, and you should only tell people about it if you have a very good reason. And it's interesting that it's like an all or nothing thing. Either you keep it until the last possible moment, you tell no one, or you tell people as soon as you can when you can plausibly lie about having found it. Because this right. feels like the worst of both worlds, where you're now telling her in an attempt to build trust, but in the process losing trust, and also showing that you didn't tell her when you found it, and instead you waited another week or two until the convenient moment when it made sense for you.
Right. I always have been generally a big proponent of just keep your idol to yourself. That should always be your default mode. It will take a really good reason for me to tell anyone about it, whatever idol it is that I had. And that is purely just on the grounds of, like, I cannot rely on anyone that I have just met out there playing Survivor to keep this a secret for me. I want to know that I am the only one with this information. I don't want to be worried, what if Laurel went and told other people and now they know I'm lying to their face about not having an idol or anything of that nature. I don't want any part of that. And I also think that people are far more willing to forgive and forget that you didn't tell them about an idol if the idol is coming in at the last minute to save the day and get this plan through for your side. I think they're like, oh, that's fantastic news. Whereas with what we saw Wendell do, you're right. It seems like the best move is either wait till the last minute or tell them basically as soon as you can tell them about having found it recently. But what Wendell is doing is basically saying, I've had this idol for a while. Up until yesterday, I didn't even feel like telling you about it. And now, even though I'm saying nothing has ostensibly changed, for whatever reason, today is the day that I feel comfortable making that statement to you and filling you in on this information. I feel like, as I kind of said earlier about this scene, but we'll reiterate now, when you are Laurel in this situation, yes, it's good that he's finally willing to tell you, but I would be very worried about the fact that, that he didn't feel willing to tell me earlier.
What about saying, you're the only one I'm telling because I trust you implicitly. And I haven't told Dom. Dom doesn't know. You're the only one I'm telling, and we can use this together against him if necessary, or just to move ourselves forward in the game. Because as you said, when you leave it for so long, you can't credibly say, well, I did find it 2 weeks ago, but I had a good reason for not telling you. Maybe you have to just invent some other lie, and that's the route you have to take.
Right. I think that is a good idea in terms of, like, if you're going to try to control the narrative of how this has all come about and who knows about it, spinning it as I'm only telling you because you're the first person I've been willing to trust with this information is probably much better than, oh, yeah, Dominic's known all along. We just haven't felt compelled to tell you yet. But I would say when you're also including I have an idol and Dominic has an idol, but Dominic doesn't know about my idol, I would, in Laurel's shoes, be very nervous about whoever's telling me that, about, like, clearly even this person who I would be replaying the scenario where Dominic tells Wendell about his idol and Wendell essentially says, oh, that's awesome, I wish I had one of my own, but I don't. And I would be nervous about that person if I'm Laurel.
You'd almost be offended on Dom's behalf that he wasn't right. told already. Yeah. There's also a risk that you turn into Ryan from last season, where the two people that you've each said the other one doesn't know end up comparing notes, and now neither of them trust you anymore. So maybe this is just too high risk for not much reward.
It reminds me, this kind of potential conundrum, of what happened to Steven in Token Chains, where he knew about the idol that he and Taj had found, but hadn't told JT about it for a little while. And then JT just, like, stumbled upon it in Taj's bag. And Steven had a very awkward conversation with JT. And I would say, in retrospect, JT probably should have been a little more critical of Steven in that moment, where when he says, by the way, oh my God, Steven, you won't believe it, Taj has an idol. And you can see, like, the sheer panic come across Steven's face, and his eyes get all wide, and he just says, I know. And JT just rolls with it. And JT's like, this is great. Oh, that's awesome. You already know. This is even better. When it should be totally the opposite. It should be, wait, what the hell? Why didn't you tell me about this already? It,
definitely an underrated Steven moment, for sure. but it's worth not forgetting how important that information can be in the eyes of other people too. So you saw in South Pacific, when one of the big bombshells that was dropped at Final Tribal was Sophie telling Brandon, oh, that idol find was completely staged, we already had done that. And to be fair, there maybe part of that too was Coach saying to Brandon, this is God's will that we find this, and we have the Lord leading the way or whatever. But it is like a good weapon that you're basically arming them with to use against you when the time's right.
I remember South Pacific was the very first season we ever podcasted about, and I remember bringing that up when it happened, like, oh, whenever Brandon finds out about this, Coach is toast, I would imagine. And I think by the time Brandon found out about it, Coach was already toast in his mind after along similar lines, actually, at that Final Five vote. Coach voted Brandon out because that's what God wanted, and that's the explanation he gave Brandon.
Not even in the top five God-themed betrayals of that season. But yeah, worth keeping that in mind for sure.
Yeah. We just brought up Stephen Fishback, and let's get into the reward challenge. It's the Stephen Fishback Memorial Slingshot Challenge. I truly do feel bad for Stephen anytime that this on, you know, in Wednesday between 8 and 9 when this Slingshot Challenge inevitably pops up every season and he has to get tormented on Twitter all over again. But any other time of the year, I think I would gladly trade places with Stephen on Twitter.
He has a steelier constitution than I do. I would be on a Troyzan-esque blocking spree whenever this challenge comes up, but he seems to take it in his stride.
Yeah, we'll see what happens when that vote steal comes into play potentially down the line, although I guess it's just a bonus vote. And incidentally, I'd forgotten all about that.
I forgot about that multiple times this week after reading your notes, being reminded of it, and then forgetting about it again before I read the notes a second time. Like, for some reason, it's so forgettable, and maybe it's because there are so many bigger advantages in play that this one just flies under the radar. And also that it's never been mentioned again. So you have Dom and Wendell's idols coming up all the time. Michael has an idol. Jay has an idol, apparently, too. But Kellen just secretly has this advantage, which could decide the entire course of the game. And no one, including her, is talking about it. So the first time that comes up in the previously on Survivor segment, expect some fireworks to happen at that tribal.
Right. We will never hear about it again until we see in the previously on, oh, Kellen got a bonus vote. And then we will know that night it will come into play.
But to you, is that a sign that it won't be used to good effect? It's just going to be used and maybe it misfires, or she uses it for security's sake, but it's already like a 6-3 vote or something? Or is that just because there's so much else going on, we don't need a reminder of that ahead of time?
I think because there's so much else going on, we will not get will we get a reminder before this is the episode where this will actually come into play. But along kind of similar lines to that question, I could see a potential scenario where not only does this extra vote maybe even never end up getting used, or certainly not used in like a meaningful way. I could also see, if things keep going this smoothly for Dominic and Wendell, those idols never end up getting used in a meaningful way either. And all of the devices that production tried to put in to prevent this kind of majority from just steamrolling the entire post-merge just fall into the hands of the people that are already in charge. And I could see that being one possible timeline where all of these advantages, as many as there have been thrown into the game, over the course of the season, we will find that actually they come into they have surprisingly little effect, although that could obviously go harshly in the opposite direction as well. But this reward challenge, as you alluded to earlier, Dom, the fact that this challenge, they let this run for like a full 6 or 7 minutes or so, there was no editing in terms of like speeding this up, seemed to further solidify for people that, well, they're killing so much time on the challenge, this vote can't possibly be interesting. I guess Libby has to go.
When I saw you note this down, I paid attention on my rewatch, and it was a solid 7.5 minutes from end to end, and that includes the preamble and Jenna getting sent to Ghost Island and nothing even happening, so coming back from Ghost Island. But within that stretch, that was a solid quarter of the episode that just vanished for no real effect.
I want to do a podcast where I'm not even there, but you just have my notes and you just constantly reference my notes for a podcast that I'm not even there to give my opinions on.
They're good notes. You should take it as a compliment.
All right. Thank you. But no, I just don't understand. Like, we have been using the exact same, I'll do the rundown on Google Docs and add you to it, for 6.5 years at this point. And only for the last couple months has this ever become like something that got mentioned on the show. It's just, I don't know what changed.
Well, previously I was stealing your takes and just presenting them as my own, but now I'm giving you the credit that you're due for them.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much for that. So I guess this reward challenge, nothing too notable there other than Wendell looking really good, like beasting it for his team to end up winning. I do want to say it was noted by Jeff, there was a schoolyard pick that was done to determine teams rather than a random draw. We didn't get to see the draft. I don't care at all about that. I think they should always do a schoolyard pick rather than random teams. Draw for however many captains you need. This is such, as far as I'm concerned, a production no-brainer when you're one of the Survivor producers to at least open the door for people to make picks that other people are unhappy with, like open the door for people to make mistakes, essentially, I think is one of the keys, particularly in a season that looks like it may be a very straightforward pagonging. And so, yeah, anything else to add about...
And on that, if your concern is that it takes up too much time or people won't care, you don't even have to show it. As long as it goes into effect and there's a chance that people get mad at each other over something completely insignificant, that's all you need. That's fine. There's no sacrifice on your part or on the viewer's part either.
Right. We don't need to, no matter how we choose the teams, we don't necessarily need to show the process of that happening. And this at least has a plenty more upside than random teams do in terms of causing a stir back at camp. Wendell's team ends up winning here. The losing team is going to draw rocks because the winners are not going to unanimously pick anyone from that group to go to Ghost Island. And Jenna is going to get the bad rock, I guess, in this context, because there's no game for her out there on Ghost Island. Did you have anything notable from this Ghost Island segment or Jenna? Any deep insights on along those lines?
Nothing whatsoever. We need to throw that entire segment in the fire.
Well, okay, I guess I'm glad you bring that up. And conveniently, that was the next thing listed on my notes, Dom, is the nope, no game for you parchment. I believe this was the first time that it said, throw this note in the fire. And I'm glad that they put that on there, because I remember the very first time we saw Ghost Island and saw that piece of paper existing, whoever it was, I think it was Donathan who got the first nope, no game for you. I said in that podcast, that is the most important piece of paper to bring back with you and prove to people you didn't get anything. And I'm guessing that's what happened at some point this season. And now they're making sure people don't have that concrete deniability about their time on Ghost Island. So I'd like to see that from production as well. Angela, right before the immunity challenge, I thought it was interesting. Angela got kind of a visibility spike with during the whole scene of Michael hatching this kind of like what we know now to be just like this total decoy plan that never really took off of turning things on Dom and Wendell, which looks like it's going great until Angela immediately runs and rats him out to Wendell there. And we got Wendell saying, let's have a common, easy vote and get him out of here, him being Michael. And so I was feeling like as this is introducing us to the immunity challenge, I thought Michael was for sure going to be winning this immunity challenge, and if not, surely going to be playing his idol, because of course we are not going to have a common easy vote just completely telegraphed like that when it's a common easy vote. As we see, they bend over backwards to make it seem like that's not going to be the case. But at the immunity challenge, Angela maintains this visibility spike, Dom, because as it turns out, she does not appear to have either taste buds or a gag reflex. And during the gross food challenge, that's going to come in quite handy. What did you think of Angela's performance here?
I loved it. Between like the tongue sticking out and just deep throating the entire sea slug, and also that like weird interpretive dance that she was doing in between the rounds, she may be a reptile of some kind. I'm not quite sure. Really a bravura performance from Angela. And as the world's inaugural Stangela, I'm pleased to welcome other people to her fan club.
That's right. The Stangela army, I think, got several new people enlisted this week. I remember, you know, everyone who listens to this podcast a couple weeks ago will remember that Dom preseason declared at some point in the middle of the season he was going to put himself out there and blindly defend someone that no one else seemed to be paying much attention to. And Angela ended up being that person. And Dom, a big week for you. I got to give you credit where it's due.
Thank you. I was a Stangela before. It was cool. And it was never cool, but it was so... Right now, people are stanning her ironically, and it's cool to do that. I was doing it when it wasn't cool to stan her ironically or unironically. So I was in on the ground floor, and I want to reap the reward of that. I'm not going to let anyone take the spotlight away from me.
You get all of the fantasy points for Angela doing well this episode. I'm happy to add those on to your team of Jacob Derwin and Morgan. So Angela is going to be our immunity winner here. I thought it was interesting also, Dom, that Wendell, in his first round performance, didn't even attempt to eat the fish eyes. And in a season where Probst has had no problem berating Chelsea in particular for sitting out of so many challenges or not giving a full effort, and just historically has had no issue with doing that to anyone, we got barely anything of him even noting for the audience that Wendell was not really trying.
Maybe this is the biggest sign of all that Wendell is just going to go on to crush the season. It's not that unnecessary seashell scene with Sebastian on the seashore. It's not the let's all sing about Wendell's girlfriend segment. Maybe it's this. Maybe it's just Wendell not getting berated for something which, by any reasonable standard, Jeff would have to rake you over the coals for. Like anybody else, he would be going in and not relenting. But for Wendell, he just gets off scot-free. So... not sure what's going on there.
Yeah, pretty interesting. And compare that to, again, I meant, you know, Chelsea's been his target of choice this season. I don't know if it was this week or last week, where during the middle of one challenge, it made the air of him saying, like, Chelsea must be feeling good just to be out here participating this time. Nothing close to that for Wendell here, not eating the fish eyes.
Yeah, for me, that would merit an Aubrey-style double middle finger at Jeff. Like, that's just... you're already hurting her enough by just giving her a non-existent edit. You don't need to rub it in the moment during a challenge. That's just uncalled for.
All right. So there is the immunity challenge. And Dom, now we get back to camp. We get essentially just a very long decoy setup where, hey, if the Malolos are starting to realize that if Navidi's splitting the votes, they could potentially band together, use their votes to take out whoever they want from within that Navidi team. We talked a little bit about this earlier in Laurel's position within this, but I would imagine Laurel knew how literally every single person was voting and that Laurel recognized this opportunity if she was so inclined to be taking out someone from the Navidi group. We talked about Wendell potentially not being the prime target for her out of the Navidis, just given how much he seems to trust her. But I don't want to put it in terms of, like, did Laurel make the right decision or the wrong decision in not flipping on this vote, because I don't think we know nearly enough to come to that conclusion. But Dom, what should Laurel be thinking about in this situation? Like, what should the major factors be in whether to flip or not on particularly Wendell and Dominic here?
So for me, I think it's a case of short-term difficulty versus long-term difficulty. So if you go for it now, you take out one of the bigger threats in the game. The other one is under the gun. They're in check. They probably have to play their idol if they didn't already. And you can at least keep a united front against them for the time being, probably. The issue then comes, well, what does that really do for you? Because let's say you flip right now, you vote out Wendell. I think after that, you would like to say, okay, we'll just vote out Dom. You can't necessarily do that if he still has his idol. He could also win immunity. Maybe he has something else in his bag of tricks, whatever. But even above all of that, the issue is you're still 6 Naviti to 5 Malolo, which previously didn't really mean anything. So you had Kellen leading the charge for Naviti strong. You had Dom and Wendell kind of adjacent to that. And then the Malolos weren't really a unified front. But the moment that you flip and it becomes our 5 Malolo votes just blindsided all of you Naviti people at the same time, then it does become Naviti versus Malolo, I think. And when it's 6-5 at that final 11 and you know that no one's flipping over to you, then... And you are the person who is known to have instigated that flip, and Dom is crediting you and blaming you for having betrayed him, then you become in the firing line now. And that's not a great spot to be in. The flip side of that is, if you don't do this now, when are you going to do it? So you have this this very powerful pair, both of whom seem like pretty capable players. They have lots of influence in the game, and they both have idols. They seem both decent in challenges too. When are you going to make your move? And can you guarantee that, firstly, you're going to have the numbers to do it when you try to do it? And secondly, it's not going to seem like such an obvious time to do it that they're going to know to play that idol then. Because if you only have this narrow window to flip on them, then they're not stupid. They can probably figure that out for themselves as well. And then your task becomes that much more difficult. So it may be that instead of thinking, well, this maybe isn't the perfect time and I need to wait for a better spot, maybe you think, I'm not going to get a better spot. And it's worth trying to overcome that 6-5 disadvantage, because the alternative maybe is even worse.
I see. Where do you fall within that? Because I think I would generally be siding with what appeared to be Laurel's thought process here, which was, this is just too early for me to be doing that. And I do have, like, I think it would be a much easier way. Like, I'd be much more comfortable saying this is way too early if neither of Wendell or Dominic had idols. But like, I agree, when you know they both have idols, this, it makes flipping right now a much more appealing prospect. But I just think it's so soon to be revealing your hand and being revealing to essentially 2/3 of the people left in the game that you were outright just deceitful with them the entire last round. I don't know if that's where you want to be headed. And frankly, I feel like if I was in Laurel's shoes here, I would just be trying to stay as cool as possible with Wendell and Dominic and not ever let any kind of sense come about them that I do not have their best interest at heart. But I would, behind the scenes, be working hard on building up some kind of army and orchestrating some kind of immediate boot order that would leave me in the final, like, 8, final 7, final 6 with people who would be totally willing to take out Wendell and Dominic and then go with me to the end.
But what does that look like? So let's say you vote out Michael or Libby now, the other one goes next time. Then I guess Sebastian and Jenna are left. So you can, I imagine you can rope them in, but that doesn't get you there. You need more votes than that. So maybe you're hoping that they're going to try splitting it again, and then you can make the same move, but just a few moves down the line. But then you have even fewer people to work with then. So that seems like a strictly worse version of doing it now. Versus...
Yeah.
You, I guess you have to make inroads with the Naviti people, but I don't see who's really breaking away from that. So if it's Kellen, Chelsea, Dez, and Sebastian as a type four, we don't know where Sebastian really is. He could be anywhere, just off in his own little world. But assuming he's with them, that's a pretty compelling thing you can point to at, like, the final nine and say, this is our last chance to get them out, right? So even if you paint yourself into a tough spot before then, you can make a case that we have to do this now because mathematically we're going to be locked out if we don't. I guess I'm somehow, and forgive me, I'm forgetting completely about Angela here, who I'm assuming is solidly on board with that group too. And in that case, maybe the last time you can take them out is the final 11, which is right now. It's coming up. So that would be interesting, actually, if, let's say, you vote out Wendell and then you say to Dom, look, I understand we didn't let you in on that and you're probably feeling you can't trust us anymore. It doesn't matter because it's final 11, it's 6-5. It won't be 6-5 any longer if we keep going at each other. We have to take out one of them now. You can pare those numbers down a little bit and then flip back and vote out Dom when he's not expecting it. It's tough. I'm not sure what the path is.
It's very tough, and I think one thing that you referenced that I would probably be most interested in is amassing a group of people, and Sebastian and Jenna seem like very compelling people to potentially rope in and seem and become solid votes for your side, along with you and Donathan, where at a certain point we're going to be splitting these votes between Wendell and Dominic. If one of them's an idol, fine. If they both play an idol, fine, because I, Laurel, will probably be in a position where Wendell and Dominic during this round still think I'm with them, and even if they both play their idols, someone else is going to be leaving and I'll still be in decent shape going forward.
So there was actually a fairly lively debate about this in our Patreon group this week, and one idea that I saw floated was instead of going after Dom and Wendell, you make the same move, but you go after someone from that other larger Naviti group. So maybe it's Kellen, maybe it's just someone else in there. And at the time, I kind of wrote that off because I thought, well, if you flip and you don't let Dom and Wendell in on it, well, now they're going to be mad at you, and they both still have idols, and now you're in the same position where it's Naviti versus Malolo, and it's like an even worse version of that previous scenario. But maybe that's actually the way to go. Maybe you need to keep this kind of delicate balance there so that as the Malolos you can still pivot between either side effectively. So if you take out, let's say, Kellen for the sake of argument, then you've got I guess Chelsea, Dez, and Angela on one side, Dom and Wendell on the other. I guess Sebastian could go either way, but then let's say they take out Michael and Libby, whichever Malolos are left are pretty good swing votes at that point, right? So maybe that's it sounds counterintuitive. It's like that you're getting the worst of every possible world, but maybe that's actually the way you go.
I'm wondering, and I don't think this should be like a major consideration at final 12 for Laurel or anyone else who finds himself in this situation, but it does occur to me, if I'm deciding between people in a game of Survivor who are like Wendell and Dominic or people who are more like the Chelsea and Dez and the kind of lower key Survivor player group, would be a lot more comfortable betraying the Wendell and Dominic types and having them as jurors versus the people that I would guess are probably just going to be voting for who they like more, which will probably not be me if I betrayed them.
The issue that they have to resolve somehow is that you need to overcome Dom and Wendell to win the game, but the Naviti votes you would have to pick up to do that are all so loyal to Naviti, at least from what we've seen, that you can't just like pluck them off and have one or two of them come with you. It's like a package deal. You either go with all of them or you go with none of them. I guess maybe Sebastian again is the exception there, but so I'm not seeing where these extra votes are coming from to make any of this convenient at all. And even within the Malolos, let's say Laurel and Donathan decide we're going to go with our Malolo group. It's not like they were bonded together out of choice because these are natural alliance mates and they would have come together no matter what. This is, they happen to lose so often that they're the only people left from their tribe. And now I guess just by process of elimination, that's what they have to work with, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't know if they didn't start on the same Malolo team with the same buff, that Laurel and Michael, let's say, would ever want to work together, or I don't know, Laurel and Libby, or so you see what I'm getting at here. Like this is not a marriage made in heaven. This is just who you have to work with, and none of the options really seem that good, to be honest.
Right. I'm wondering if potentially down the line, if she does want to wait a while on turning on Wendell and Dominic, we could theoretically see Laurel, once we get down to like final eight, final seven or there, just go hard sell out of Wendell and Dominic and be like, okay, gang, these two both have idols. We have no choice. Now is the time that we must start turning on them and put in just when Wendell and Dominic feel like the end game, like everything's been going their way and the end game is in sight. Laurel, I think like that right around that point in the game could be the potential time if you want to do the hard blow up of that alliance that you knew forever you wouldn't be able to actually go to the end with. I think that could be a compelling potential option as well. If you feel like, I will admit it's an extreme one, but if you feel like there's no other way but to sell everyone else in the game on just like the sense of urgency in taking out Wendell and Dominic, I do think that there are worse lines people could end up taking there, but we'll see how that ends up going. I'm really curious to see how this all ends up playing out between Wendell, Dominic, Laurel, and Donathan, because we've certainly heard a ton about them being a foursome that I think is going to have a pretty big role within the game.
The only other question I have, and it's depressing and yet funny that it could come down to this, is how far has Jenna and Sebastian's relationship progressed up to this point? Because if there's any hope of taking one of those Navitis and flipping them, it might be Jenna just beguiling Sebastian, right? And getting him on board somehow. Like that could actually be what makes this possible.
It certainly could. And again, it certainly could be that. It could be a number of things, or it could be the case that like none of this ever ends up happening and these four just are all happy to play down to the final four for whatever reason.
Why would they be though?
I don't know. But it really, if you hear the language that Dominic and Wendell in particular both use when talking about each other, nothing has led me to believe that they don't want to be in the end with each other.
I was going to say, it felt like Wendell wants to stick with Dom, but maybe Dom is happy to turn on Wendell. Thinking about it more, though, they do seem happy to. And maybe I'm one of Dom's victims here. Maybe I'm so credulous, like everyone else in his path, that I'm just going to think he's this loyal player to the end. But it does seem like he might actually consider just sticking with Wendell. Like, that's his ride or die. So.
Well, I think the thing is, I'm giving Dominic enough credit in the moment to be thinking, I really like Wendell. He seems like a great ally for now, but if it comes down to the end game and I need to cut him to win the $1 million, then I'm totally willing to do that. And it may just work out that situation never presents itself. Like that Dominic is in there thinking, I don't want to go to the end with him, but I can't have him know that anytime soon.
We've made the Wendell and Malcolm comparisons before. Could Dominic be the Denise who, despite common sense, is actually willing to take the tough opponent to the end and risk losing to them?
I don't think Dominic, like I would probably say out of this entire cast, Dominic would be the lowest candidate on my list to be that person.
Yeah, me too. And yeah, I'm starting to doubt myself now too, because it does feel like at least one of them has to be in the end game. And with that quote that I gave before, it's tough to not see Dom in front of the jury, but that quote also suggests that to get there, he's going to have to cut Wendell. So who knows? Maybe we could see that come into play at the end game.
All right. Well, Dom, as the votes come in, Michael, I guess after the votes have been cast, before they are read, Michael gets up, and it turns out this is not just a stick. It's a real idol this time around. Michael is going to be safe. All of those votes will not count, and the backup votes do end up landing here on Libby. We haven't talked a ton about her this week, or just frankly all season long. It seems like she got a rough draw being on that Malolo tribe and never really finding much room to play. What did you think of Libby overall on this season?
It's weird. It's like she was marked as a leper or something, and she was just never able to shake that off. And so whenever any votes had to go somewhere, they just funneled automatically onto Libby. Obviously, we don't see what she was doing to overcome that perception, or if she even knew if it existed or why it existed. But it must be frustrating out there in the moment to be like, what did I do wrong other than just have my tribe lose the first 5 challenges in a row or something? Like, it's not like she herself did anything that really turned people off, or she made some iconic blunder that ended up ruining her game. She was just there doing her thing, and people were so suspicious of her that they couldn't let it go.
I totally agree with all of that, insofar as I don't think there was some major mistake Libby made you can point to. I think she just got unlucky being on that tribe in the first place. Like, I'm sure she would be probably having no issue blending into at least blending into the background if she had started on the opposite tribe. But what are you going to do? Like, that's just frankly a part of Survivor, and a part that I really wish more people who watch the show would give more kind of like, or talked about the show in particular, would give more acknowledgement to, is just how big of a role luck is always going to play on any given season of Survivor. And I think Libby just was on the wrong end of that this time around. So there goes Libby. What are you going to do? Dom, I think I am out of stuff, at least for the regular episode. So let's send it over
You didn't even ask me if I was out of stuff.
I know that there's nothing forward on my notes before. I know there's nothing on my notes before the edit zone. So surely you're out of stuff.
I have one bone to pick quickly. So Michael, so at the immunity challenge, which Angela completely dominated, of course, we see Michael go back for more, right? He wants to finish it. He wants to complete the challenge, even though he was eliminated, which I kind of admire that mentality. That's a good thing to do. And then when he goes to sit down, Jeff asks him, "So, Michael, what was all that about?" And in his spiel, he says, I'm probably only going to play Survivor once. Bitch, please, you don't think you're going to play Survivor once. Nobody out there thinks you're going to play Survivor once. Jeff, I imagine, has already handed you an embossed invitation for the next All-Star season. Don't insult our intelligence. You know what's coming for you. Don't beat around the bush, right? Don't pretend like this could possibly go any other way.
This faux humility, yeah. And actually, one other note that I wanted to get to from Michael that I forgot about was when he got up to play that idol, I thought he was very smart to give just preface it before he played it, even though everyone ended up trying, you know, no one was really on his side this week. Before he gave his idol to Jeff, he said something along the lines of like, you know, just to be safe, I want to just play this and make sure that I'm going to be around next week. I think it's frankly overlooked a lot of the time when you play an idol. I would love to see virtually everyone go up there and give a speech essentially suggesting, it's not that I don't trust you guys, I just want to be totally sure. Like, I think it is vital, barring like being in a Kelly Wentworth situation or whatever, where everyone knows you're on the outs and you have the idol. I do think many people potentially miss an opportunity there to at least come across as less threatening or less like they don't trust the people they're obviously working with when they end up playing an idol. So I liked that little, it's such a small thing, but I really liked seeing that out of Michael. Dom, I think we're good now. You are, of course, on Twitter at DomHRV. I am at Colin Stone, in case anyone's going to be tuning out now before we dive further into the edit of the season. You can email us domandcolin@gmail.com. Anything else you want to bring up before we dive in?
I guess I'll just plug the stuff that we forgot to plug at the start. So we've mentioned the Simpsons and BoJack Horseman podcast a few times. Those were lots of fun. So go back and check those out if you haven't already. And within the last week, the episode that we've touted for a while now on artificial intelligence and AlphaGo, the documentary, using that as a springboard, we've released that. I had a ton of fun doing that. You maybe had less fun doing that, but we got through it in the end, and it's it all came together pretty well, I think. So hopefully you can get some value out of that, and that's now up as well.
Yeah, no, that was a ton of fun, and definitely do check that out and watch. It's on Netflix, the documentary AlphaGo. It's a really fun movie. I think you'll enjoy the podcast, frankly, even if you've seen it or not, just because Dom knows so much about that whole subject matter. But I definitely did have a ton of fun with that, and it was great getting to talk outside of our normal kind of reality TV confines.
And to be clear, even if you don't want to watch a documentary or whatever, you don't need to understand or appreciate the episode. It's using the documentary just as a reference point, but it's a more general discussion about the topic and its implications for society at large. So more important to the real world than probably anything else that we've spoken about. But either way, hopefully you can get something out of it.
Yeah, if nothing else, I'm glad to help Dom finally get some mileage out of that master's degree that he worked so hard for.
And finally, of course, once again, if you're going to be in Boston for the live Know-It-Alls, come say hi. It's always, if you haven't been to one of those before, I guess it's far too late to get tickets for this one, but try and make it out whenever you can. They're always a ton of fun and always great to meet people there.
You are listening to the Dom and Colin Edit Zone.
Mike Holloway.
Michelle Ken. Brad Culpepper.
Ben.
Chrissy.
Stephanie Gonzalez.
You are listening to the Dom and Colin Edit Zone. Tune out now. All right, so here we are in the edit zone, Dom, and I'm going to begin this edit zone with a question for you, a bet that I'm potentially willing to make here, but let's see where you land on this. I'm going to ask you, Dominic, true or false, the final five of this season is exactly in some order. I don't know the order of finish, but do you agree with this? The final five will be exactly Wendell, Dominic, Laurel, Donathan, and Kellen.
I want to say no because it's so specific, and yet it's hard not to imagine one of Chelsea or Des or Angela, I guess, or Sebastian or even Jenna or someone sneaking in there somehow. But I have no way of differentiating between them in terms of who that's going to be. Like, what's the case for it being Des instead of Angela, let's say, or Chelsea instead of Sebastian? There just isn't one, as far as I can tell.
Right.
There's no... None of them is a more compelling losing finalist or finale bootee or something than any of the others. They're just fodder, I guess, at this point.
Right. That's the thing is, I would agree with that assessment, which is I have no way of really distinguishing between anyone else in the cast. And I do think since Millennials versus Gen X, they have made a deliberate effort to get everyone who makes the finale a decent enough story that on finale night, people feel like some are going to be heavier front runners than others, but at least you know who all of the people who make the finale are and would understand why they might potentially win if they ended up getting there. And it really feels to me like the five that I listed are getting so much more visibility than everyone else that I would be at this point, frankly, pretty surprised. Like, I'm leaning that it's more likely than not that exacta ticket, those exact five, are the final five of this season. And I was wondering, though, if someone were to were to sneak in there, who that person would be. And I don't know what makes me keep going back to this other than feeling like come edit zone time, I've said her name as someone to just have an eye on for whatever weird reason. I feel like Jenna would be my pick. If I had to pick someone of who's going to sneak into there, I think Jenna would be honestly pretty clear for me as that person. And the bigger question, though, is, if someone from that group of five is going to miss in the event that like a Jenna or someone else sneaks in, who would that person be?
I have no idea. I literally have no way of making a decision there. You may as well flip a coin, or I guess you need like a four-sided coin. So roll a die instead, maybe. As far as I'm concerned, it's totally up in the air. There's no.
I would say Wendell or Dominic would be the front runner for me to be the one not there if it was if someone of those of that group was not going to be there.
Okay, I completely misheard your question then. So
okay, go for
I'll
it.
Pick it up again. So for who's going to miss out of that five, despite thinking that he's still the most likely winner, I'm inclined to say Wendell maybe, because if someone is going to be like this shock blindside in the middle to late part of the season, I think it's going to be Wendell more so than any of the others. Let's say Donathan, for example, I could see him going out just at the final five, at the final four, maybe even sneaking into the final three. But for him to just be like the sudden boot at final eight or something doesn't really mess with what we've seen so far.
No, I agree with that. I think I would probably say Wendell and Dominic would be the heavy front runners out of that five to potentially not be there at Final Five. Although I would I think I would probably say give me Dominic over Wendell potentially being the one getting cut early.
Okay. It just seems so weird, though, for that to all come together so neatly. So for them to have this solid alliance and just say, okay, we're going down the line. So we're voting out Chelsea, we're voting out Seb, we're voting out Dez, we're voting out Angela. And for that group to stick together for all of those votes and never once be tempted to turn on each other, it seems so unrealistic. And we've seen it happen before. We've seen alliances stick together despite the odds. But how can that happen? Like, it seems like we're... I guess this is all editing analysis. That is literally what it is. So there's no exception here. But it feels like we're assuming that has to be the outcome and like working backwards to try and piece together how that must be the case. But there's no way to do it where it seems in real time like it should be working at all.
Well, maybe you can dig this parallel, Dom. How about give me let me float this foursome, this Wendell, Dominic, Laurel, and Donathan, all potentially feeling like this is a group they want to go to the Final Four with. It reminds me of two pairs coming together in Philippines in the form of Malcolm and Denise and Lisa and Scoopin. Can you hang with the comparison of Wendell is the Malcolm, Laurel is the Denise,
ah,
Dominic is the Scoopin here, and Donathan is the Lisa?
There's some interesting imagery there for sure, but I can kind of see that. So
in terms of their like approach to how they're viewing their position in the game,
does this make Kellen the Abby Maria then or what?
I guess so, but I could see them all the same way that those four came together, obviously two of them very wrongly and one of them slightly less wrongly in the form of Malcolm thinking that would be a winning end game for him, but I could see all four of them potentially talking themselves into that being a good situation. Now what I can't understand at this point is how Kellen fits into that.
Yeah, I think where that parallel falls down is that came together quite late in the day. That was at the final seven, I believe, where those four votes were all you needed to have a majority. So that was very natural. And you saw in that episode, Scoopin and Lisa were shopping around for a pair to team up with. And at first, their first choice was Penner and Carter. And then when Penner just turned them down for no good reason and cost himself $1 million in the process, they decided to go with Malcolm and Denise instead. Whereas this time, that foursome came together pre-merge, and we're now at 11 people left. So it's going to be a while before they actually have control over the votes, if that's what they're going for. So the timing certainly feels quite different. And then, as you said, we've been saying from the start, Kellen is getting too much attention not to be there at the end in some capacity. And how does she fit into that? I don't know. And of all the Naviti women plus Sebastian, which there's got to be a neater term for that. She seems like the least likely, if any, to be dragged along or to be the obvious fifth. So maybe she goes on some amazing winning streak. Maybe she follows in Chrissy's footsteps from last season. But other than that, I'm not seeing where she fits in that equation.
Right. And the problem for me with that is I still would probably say Kellen, just based on her visibility and how much she's getting to give us her perspective, I think I would still say Kellen for me is the most likely person to be in the finals, even as we spent this entire time talking about it being not a foregone conclusion, but looking more and more likely that this Power Four will, at least if they are so inclined, be able to steamroll their way through the game. I still feel like Kellen is going to somehow find her way in that final tribal council. And I can't even begin to speculate at how that's going to come about at this point.
Maybe instead it's, this foursome does run the game and you need someone to define the other side. Because if it's Chelsea and Angela and Dez and Sebastian, you need someone who can be like the figurehead there to be the alliance leader who gets taken down in some big moment of the season. And if Kellen is just another one of those invisible edits, then there's literally nothing there to latch onto.
Yeah, I really don't know. And I guess kind of along similar lines, I would say Michael is getting a ton of visibility as well, obviously, and is looking really good. But I would, as we've said in previous edit zones, I feel like Michael would just get that anyway. And I would say Michael would probably be more the person for me that is representing the big threat from the opposition that they need to take down eventually. But again, like to kind of contradict my own point from earlier, I would say both Kellen and Michael have an equally difficult time, almost equally difficult time at this point, trying to come up with a coherent way that they're going to make the end in a position to win. But
that's nonsense. Come on. So Michael, I think, has to win his race at the end, but it literally would be unprecedented.
What I'm saying. I can't come up with a way that he's going to.
Whereas Kellen very easily could just lead that Naviti straggler alliance, take out Dom and Wendell, and then she becomes Kim Spradlin, basically, if she does that.
Okay, I suppose I will grant that it is much easier to understand how Kellen would get to the end game than Michael specifically. But the point I was trying to get at is why I am essentially counting Michael out despite him getting a really glowing edit, while I'm essentially penning Kellen in because of her glowing edit, despite not having a realistic idea of how she might get there. The reason I think goes back to that Aubrey versus Michelle logic of Michael would look really good anyway, whereas I feel like if Kellen, the way the rest of this game is playing out around her, if she did anything other than make the finals, she would not be nearly this visible. All right. So what other, I guess we can talk in terms of just how you're splitting the pie up for actual winner of the season at this point, Dom. Is Wendell still your easy number one?
Yeah, and Dom is actually jumping up quite a bit, even though I guess there was nothing this episode to make me think, oh yeah, his edit's really taking this turn for the better. Maybe I was just underselling him this whole time before. And he deserved a much greater slice of the pie than I gave him before. And maybe even a greater slice of the pie than I berated you for giving him in the past. Apologies to you and to him in case that ends up coming through.
Well, I was going to say, I feel like everyone basically has been underselling Dominic's winning chances all season. And I think this was probably one of his quieter episodes. I think there was one where he was almost totally invisible. But I'm fine with him being quiet when he starts it by saying, I want to hang back this week and let other people feel like they're making the decisions.
And this is in relative terms. So quieter for him means he right. gets 10 confessionals instead of 24. But that is a cause for concern, though, because we've had very visible winners in the past. We've had the Boston Robs, we've had the people who, and Boston Rob was maybe the inaugural coronation edit in terms of someone who was just there at the forefront from pillar to post, and you never really doubted that it was going to go his way. And we've had people in that mold since then. So Kim was the same way, and we've had others, like even Tyson to maybe a lesser extent.
Mike Holloway was a coronation edit. Ben was a coronation edit for the most part.
Oh, we found reasons to doubt Ben, but yeah, you did. I never wavered. But, in any case, I think for Dom, though, this is almost to another degree than any of those. Dom is the only character on the season, pretty much, other than Wendell. So unless it is Dom versus Wendell, and Wendell continues being equally visible, which it could be, I could definitely see that, then it feels like it's so bloated that it has to pop at some point.
Mm-hmm. And did potentially Laurel go up in your pie rankings this week? I know a lot of people were talking about this potentially being a breakout episode to get her back on the pie chart, as people always frame it.
We were saying, I think 2 weeks ago, that she needed something right then. So this might still be too little too late. But for Laurel, again, she's never going to be a Dominic. She's not going to have 25 confessionals an episode, even when she's a pivotal player. She's always going to be quieter, just hanging back a little bit. And that's fine for her. So the fact that she's getting anything at all now is a sign for hope, I guess.
Yeah, I'm hoping that it is still in the cards as a possibility, and that maybe this was her delayed merge episode coming out party as one of the stronger players in the game. I still feel like everything we've seen from Laurel has been her looking really good and playing a smart game. I do worry, though, that it is potentially too little too late, although I think it's certainly possible that Laurel is still in there drawing live, potentially. At this point, I would probably be saying that Laurel would be the very distant number four person for me, with Wendell, Dominic, and Kellen taking up the vast majority of the pie there, and Laurel probably being the only one still drawing live for me at this point, other than, I guess, leaving the door open for Michael completely running the table. But I guess, last week we talked about Wendell having at least half of the win equity. I may be coming down off of that after this week. I think Dominic went up quite a bit this week, and Kellen has remained for me someone that should not be ruled out.
So how would you divide up that pie-shaped object then? If you had to choose.
I would I would probably say give me Wendell 35%, Kellen 35%, Dominic 25%, and Laurel the final 5%.
Oh, wow. So you have Wendell and Kellen on equal footing then, it sounds like.
Right around there. I really do feel like they're... I think Kellen is just such a lock to be in the finals that I have a hard time putting her lower than that at this point.
Okay, I think I would still have like Wendell at 40 to 45 maybe. So he is ahead of the pack still. But yeah, I think it is a much closer race than it has been, in my eyes at least, in the past. And that's good. I'm glad that we at least get to debate this for a little while longer.
Yeah. One final name that I want to bring up that I'm not sure has come up in any capacity over the course of this episode. We've been talking about Donathan just being virtually a lock to be in there with that group, but how is that going to go for him? I know I've talked about how ever since the premiere, I have locked Donathan in as one of the participants in the Final Four Fire Challenge. I had been thinking for the most part that he would lose that and be like the person who came up just short, but I was actually listening to Nick Yadanza last week on RHAP, and he made a comparison that I actually really liked in thinking about the possibility of Donathan just being the next Ty Trang, where he makes it to the finals and everyone likes him and he's a sweet guy, but they just don't respect his game. What do you think about how that's going to go?
I was going to ask, is he going to be a Ko-Rong tie or Game Changer tie? Because I could see it going either way, actually. But also, in line with that that fire theory that we keep coming back to, I said before the Dom quote that I highlighted of you have to turn on your best friend and then explain it to them at the end, and you had the cut of Laurel and Donathan as that was being said. I wonder if you can reconcile that with Laurel turns on Donathan and someone else votes with him. So he's still in the fire challenge, but it's her vote that sends him there and he loses, maybe goes to the jury. And that's what ends up being the big betrayal. There was also, she said in this episode, something like, this is the move that's going to decide the course of the game, or maybe her game. And normally that would be just a semantic distinction, but in this case, it might actually be quite important because I agree that this is a big vote, and this is, like, you can imagine, like, the path dependency. If you go back in time, this could be the thing where if you do this one move differently, everything else after this point changes. So I wonder if like, Laurel ends up being a losing finalist or something, this is the move where, like, it was a missed opportunity. And this is where Dom and Wendell got away with something that maybe they shouldn't have done.
Yeah. All right. Well, Dominic, I am out of edit zone takes and just takes in general for the week. Anything else you wanted to get to that we haven't hit on yet?
No, I think I'm good.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much for listening. If you've made it this far, once again, at DomHRV, at Colin Stone, DomandColin at gmail.com. If you want to get in touch with us through any of those various media, we're recording a very exciting week of BB10 on the patron feed tomorrow. It's week 7. Dan Giesling is going to be head of household, replacement nominee roulette. A lot of fun going on over there. If you're interested in hearing those bonus episodes or just supporting the show in general, Patreon.com/Dom and Colin. I think that will be all. We will get you out of here. Thank you so much for checking us out. Take care, everybody.